there, everybody. You are listening to This Show Is So Gay. I'm your host, Ken Schneck. This is episode number 280. As always, you can get in touch with us by dropping us a line, send an email on over to ken@thisshowissogay.com. Stroll on over to thisshowissogay.com to learn all about the fun things happening with our little gay radio show that could. You can follow us on Twitter. The handle is thisshowissogay. And of course, go to the Facebook, type in This Show Is So Gay, like us, because we sure as heck like you. We have such a fun episode for you this week. We must get started with our first guest. Billy Myers is one of my favorite singer-songwriters on this whole gosh darn planet. Her mega hit, Kiss the Rain, spent something like 12 years on the Billboard Top 100 charts. I think it might still be number 7, where it's been charting since 1997. She has a ton of other albums, all of which are on regular rotation in my car. Ready for this one, Billy? She is wonderful. She sends me flying. She makes me painfully happy. And she takes me to a place where Romeo never dies. Billy, welcome back to This Show Is So Gay.
Oh, my God. Ken, that was probably one of the best introductions I've ever had.
It's your third time on the show. I had to up the ante a little.
Well, honey, you don't need to, because I'm being on the show, so you don't have to. If anything, could you just calm it down a little? You're just so easy and make it so lovely and nice. So thank you for that. That's made me smile.
Well, we have so much ground to cover. Are you ready?
I am.
Now, surprisingly, Billy Myers, we actually have not talked about Kiss the Rain all that much, so I've put together a little Kiss the Rain lightning round for you.
Okay, go ahead.
Okay, we got three questions in our lightning round.
Go.
Billy Myers, the most memorable place you, Billy Myers, have ever performed Kiss the Rain?
On the back steps of the Vatican.
There you go. Well, I don't think we're going to top that. Billy Myers, question number 2, the most memorable place you have ever heard it being sung?
Okay, this is a silly thing. But it wasn't that I heard it. It was actually the most memorable would always be, I think if you ask most people, the first time they ever heard a song being played. But for me, it was kind of funny because I was actually in a dressing room in Miami at the time. And I was like beside myself rushing to get out of the dressing room because I could not believe that Kiss the Rain was on the radio. And as I'm rushing out, they changed the station. It was very memorable.
I love it. I love it. And can't even go on. Question number 3 in our lightning round. The most memorable cover you've ever heard of Kiss the Rain?
I would say, actually, that I would say there's a fantastic performer in L.A., Keith Rain, and he is truly amazing.
Okay.
Just fantastic on every level, on a sort of a drag queen evening. And I was literally in the audience and didn't know that he was going to do it. I don't know that he would have done it had he known I was there. And it was just fantastic. He did that and he did Tell Me. And to have someone just do that because they wanted to, not because they knew I was there, it was absolutely fantastic for me.
That's so funny that you say that because I have to tell you, by the way, the Kiss the Rain lightning round has now ended. You won.
Okay.
Yeah.
I would. Oh, cool.
I have to tell you, for the first time today, I'm not sure where, you know, how I missed it, where I was. This is the first time today that I had ever seen the video for Tell Me.
Oh.
I never watched it before.
Yeah.
I know the song. I know every word.
Yeah, it's very naughty.
It's risque, one might say.
Well, let me tell you, it's not often that you get the guy who goes on to be in Lost in your music video. So, you know, what was I supposed to do? Keep my clothes on? I mean, really, ask any of your listeners, if Joss is going to be offering to kiss you and wear PVC and let you put a dot color on him, are you going to say no? I beg that 99% of your listeners are going to say absolutely bloody not.
Or as Billy Myers likes to call it, a Tuesday.
Yes, it's just my normal Tuesday.
Yes.
Josh, come over here in that all-in-one PVC jumpsuit. Yes, indeed. Come on.
I would like our listeners to go back to Billy's last appearance on our show, which, by the way, was like 2 years ago, which is crazy.
Seemed like it was that long.
I know.
I thought it was only a year.
I know.
Wow. I realize I haven't been negligent. You didn't ask.
I know. Don't start with me. But listen, I want people to go listen to your last appearance where the video director had to say to Billy, a little less sexy, Billy, a little less sexy.
Yeah, I know. Shameful, really. But the worst thing is I hadn't really done much of a song and dance about Tell Me in England, because it was done here. And then, so I'm literally, it's one Sunday afternoon, and I have a brother, and he phoned me up, and he's like, Billy. I'm like, yes, Gary, how are you? He's like, well, we were just watching MTV here. And I'm like, yes, you were. He went, well, Billy, well, I'm like, yeah. He's like, well, did you do a song? A video? And I'm like, I've done several. What are we done? He's like, well, there's this woman, and she's wearing wigs, and she's in PVC, and, well, kind of like, just like, maybe she's kissing women, maybe? And I'm like, uh-huh. And he's like, well, is it you? I'm like, yeah, yeah. And I mean, honestly, it was so far removed, my little brother in Coventry. It was quite, I was actually very embarrassed with myself at that point. It was like, yeah. That's not something ever any member of your family ever needs to see you frolicking in a PVC being, you know, spanked. I mean, just no member of your family should ever see that, really.
I am, for one of the first times in the history of the show, without words. Want to put that out there. Yes, no, that video got most of its play there in Coventry.
Yes, it's probably my brother going, no, that's not my sister. Or friends going, oh, my God, I know her. Yes,
I love it. All right, well, you and I have much ground to cover. We were due to tape this interview last week. Unfortunately, the technology god said no. But last week was Mental Health Awareness Week, which I'm kind of ambivalent about, just because every week should be Mental Health Awareness Week. But that's why I'm fine having you on this week. You have been such an outspoken advocate for talking about mental health, for destigmatizing it. And so I want to cover so much ground with you. But where does it start for you? What are your earliest memories of wrapping your brain around mental health?
You know, it really wasn't on my periphery. In terms of being outspoken, it was after, you know, I Kiss the Rain was incredibly fantastic, and as was Tell Me, you know, and I got to travel and have a lot of fantastic times. But I really didn't enjoy it. And I thought it was just that's how it was. And then a couple of things happened along the way. And before I knew it, I was in a really, really awful place. But it felt normal. I didn't feel that I was in a bad place. It just felt that everything that I was responding was in a normal response to life. Mm-hmm. And very, you know, oh, woe is me, I can't go on. And then literally one day I said to my friend, you know, when you play chicken on the road. And she kind of looked at me and said, well, I don't play chicken on the road. And I'm like, no, come on, everyone's played chicken on the road, where you think, if I hit, go as close to that wall, or I'm going to go close to that edge, how close can I get before I go over? And she just looked at me, and literally within a week, she literally took me by the scruff of my neck and took me to a psychiatrist. And it was very much a sort of awakening that, oh, and he asked some very insightful questions. You know, he said, tell me when you were a child. And I was like, well, the same as everybody else, blah, blah, you know, what? I mean, I think you're a child, it's your upbringing. And there were a couple of little things he picked up on. And I said to him, yeah, sometimes, you know, like school, one minute you could tell me anything and I would remember it and, you know, get 100% on exams. And then the next minute you would tell me something and I couldn't remember it.
Right.
Or, you know, one day I'd be okay. I was always a loner. But, you know, it would always feel like there was something on my chest, like there was a weight literally on my chest. And he said, you know, do you think that's normal? And I said, well, it is to me. And he went through a lot of these different things and concluded, you know, that I probably had ongoing clinical depression since I was a kid. And I look back now at the writing that I still have from those years. And there was a real melancholy and darkness that no child should really be writing about. You're supposed to be writing nice things, you know, but that was never the case. And so in terms of awareness, it's not that I was aware young or as a teenager or with just never really feeling like I fit in or always having isolation issues and incredibly insecure and so on and so on and so on. And so he really, you know, he took me through a lot of things and eventually convinced me that I should try medicine, which I have to be honest, you know, my initial reaction was, I'm fine, I don't need to do that. It's very, very English. I can work my way through this. This is an excuse.
Mm-hmm.
And for myself, it wasn't like I suddenly walked out of his office or anyone's office really and went, oh my God, this is fantastic.
Right.
It took me eventually taking pills and eventually feeling better to eventually realize how ill I had been. And then I became angry, to be honest. I was like, how could somebody have not spotted that? How
right.
could you have not at school spotted? Surely if a kid is going from acing maths exams and science exams to getting 17% and you're insisting that person sporadically just doesn't try, these are signs. If this person tends to be on their own a lot and in corners a lot, these are signs. And I got very angry because I was like, how could somebody have not spotted these signs? And then I realized if everybody stays silent about it and everyone cowers in shame and everybody's always embarrassed, which, you know, even myself still, and I don't make excuses to anyone for having an illness. There are times still where I do a double take on, am I right? Am I wrong? Is it, you know, because people, I still, you know, find myself just questioning my own
right.
you know, theory on depression. And that was really when I thought, enough already. You know, I can either be a bigger part of the same problem. And to be honest, I've had too many kids, especially when I was touring, come up to me at different times or had far too many emails. I had two things that, you know, then they both relate to Kiss the Rain, but they don't relate to the performance of, but the impact of. I had a mother come up to me at Lilith, and she had not come to Lilith because she was a Lilith fan, but because her son, his favorite song was Kiss the Rain. And unfortunately, he passed, and he had chosen to, in his letter, one of the requests was that they would play Kiss the Rain at his funeral to remind her
wow.
that he, even if he wasn't right in front of her, that he was there.
Wow.
And then there was another similar example, but it was actually the young man in front of me who said, I heard you talk about something. I think I was talking about sexuality. And he said, it was a day I was so despondent, depressed, and I'd been thrown out. And I just happened to catch this on the radio. And you made me go a day longer and I'm still here.
Wow.
And I would like to be really, you know, all knowing and say, oh, I just had this incredible epiphany and I'm so incredibly clever. I'm not. I'm as scared as the next person. But those two things made such a remarkable difference that you can't have people say that and not have an impact on how you choose thereafter to either, as I said, confound the problem or work, hopefully, as well as you can to stop it. I mean, I wish I could save the world. You know, we joked about that before we came on air.
Yeah.
But I'm okay if it's just one person who doesn't do something desperate in a moment of need, that if they just happen to turn on this show, Ken, just as they're thinking about it, and they go, I'm not alone, other people feel like that, then we have done our job.
That's why we do this.
For the rest of our lives.
Yeah. Yeah. What prepares you, Billy Myers, to be the recipient of those stories? I mean, there's no handbook as you're writing a song that may or may not catch on that is going to trigger people sharing these stories with you. What do you think
yeah.
in your life has prepared you to be such a stalwart recipient of these tales?
I think that maybe the people telling me the stories knew more about me than I did.
Wow, yeah.
I think that maybe, you know, whether it was through the lyrics or performance, or maybe when they had heard me talk, that they knew more than I did, that they recognized the signs more than I did. And God bless them. I mean, you know, we get sometimes wrapped up and we forget that we're not alone and that there's a lot of people, we're all the same on so many levels, and we just need to feel that we belong and that we're not isolated. And I'm not going to lie and say, woohoo, isn't that just charming? I work with and work through depression on a daily basis, but I can honestly tell you, I'm not sure I would change it.
Mm-hmm.
I think that for whatever reason, I think that it has become a gift in a bizarre way, because I do get to talk. I get lovely people like you asking me to waffle on, you know, on the radio, and I get to do different things, and to be honest, on some point, Ken, it's completely self-serving. I feel good about myself when I know that I'm being honest and that I could potentially be making a difference somewhere. And I know, I hope that your viewers understand what I mean by that, but it's not self-serving in a bad way, but it actually helps me too. And it taken away the stigma that I feel,
right,
and that I question every time I know that somebody got what I said and they understood, or that they say it before I say it and I got it. It's kind of like speaking the same language and knowing that you're right.
Yeah.
Does that make sense?
Oh, my gosh, does it make sense? I mean, you're an individual. This show is all about, this is what we've been doing for 7-plus years now. It's about featuring voices, and voices are attached to people, and all the better if people listen to those voices and they affect them. That's why we feature them.
Yeah.
But I never want to take away, kind of, you know, disambiguate the voice from the person. Otherwise, there's no meaning in what it is that you're doing.
I mean, it is a gift. It's just how you... You know, some people have diabetes, some people will have, you know, different things throughout their lives. And the thing is, if you have diabetes or you have even cancer or heart disease, it's okay to talk about those things. But society, through the generations, has really stigmatized depression as a weakness, as somehow a failing. And that's just so wrong. And we just need to turn the clock back. You know, I read about a 9-year-old committing suicide, or the fact that suicide is one of the leading killers of young gay teens.
Yeah.
This is an astounding and disgusting indictment of our society, that teachers are not spotting it. The fact that, you know, a kid, how many months ago, the police came, his parents were concerned, they had seen his YouTube, read his diary, they called the police. The police said, oh, no, he's fine. They will leave him, and he ends up shooting up a school. I'm sorry, but the truth of that is, you can't blame the parents, and you certainly can't blame the boy, and you certainly can't expect media, who for the most part are irresponsible, not to do anything but, you know, be irresponsible. But you can blame the powers that should know better.
And
a policeman, a fireman, a nurse, a teacher, these are people who we rely on to spot things. You know, I see it every day. I turn on the news, and then the news somehow, and the, you know, they turn it as into, oh, of course it happened because that person was crazy. And I'm like, that is unacceptable. You know, suddenly, oh, because they're crazy. And you're like, well, no. What happened before he got to that desperate place? How could you not spot a young man or a young girl dressing in black, having death fantasies, like doing diagrams on death fantasies and all of this stuff, and not think that that's a problem?
Right. Right. You know, you wrote this great piece. Again, listeners, we're here with singer-songwriter Billy Myers.
I'm probably depressing your listeners. I'm so sorry.
No. This is why we do this. This is why we do this.
I apologize.
No, there's no apology. There's no apologies. This is why we have you on. This is why I need to call you more often. You wrote this great piece where you ran through several different myths about mental illness, and many of them you've covered already, and I wanted to hit a couple more. One of them you wrote... It's myth number 4, mental illness is fashionable and trendy. And I think back to when, you know, Angelina Jolie and Winona Ryder were in Girl Interrupted, and there was all the conversation about Girl Interrupted, and they made it look so kind of trendy and fashionable, and you can win an Oscar for having mental illness and playing it.
Mm.
But that's kind of still out there, of that idea of being fashionable and trendy, and, oh, she's just goth.
Yeah, and there is goth, but then there's this whole sensibility now. I mean, there's also something that gets me into trouble. There is also this entire other aspect of our society that is just as culpable, and it's that doctor that you go to who is not qualified or trained in psychiatry and sends you out with 3 or 4 different tablets, none of which are right for you.
Yeah.
And then, you know, what ridiculous world is it that the advertisements say, may cause suicidal thoughts and anxiety.
Right.
Now, if I had cancer and it said, enhance my cancer and cause suicidal thoughts, we get all panic-stricken when we think we're going to get cancer. We stop drinking olive oil. But yet, we have these pills that people push down the mouths of kids. We don't monitor how they're being, you know, how the kids are reacting to them.
Yeah.
Or experiment enough to find out what the right dosage is. And I get so frustrated, because that's just as bad as people who stigmatize it.
Right. Yeah. One other myth you had myth number three, people with mental illness are of no use to society and can't hold down a job.
Yeah, well, Abraham Lincoln, I think, will put that to rest.
Right, right. Yeah. And then I have to ask you, and I feel, you know, now we're getting to this post point, this meta point, where you can't talk about Robin Williams and because, everyone's talked about it.
I know you did. Yeah.
And I think people at this point are not even sure what to do with that story now.
The story is a man, whoever he was, whose name happened to be Robin Williams, elected to make a very, very sad choice. But we still have to look at how it got there.
Right.
This is a young man. And, I got into a very irritated argument on Facebook because somebody was silly enough, and I called them on it straight away, that, you know, I done a little thing about Robin Williams, and it was somebody else with depression, and they came on and they were like, yes, but you know what, he was a drug addict and an alcoholic. And I'm like, so, and your point was what is your point here? And they're like, well, you know, some of us just cope. And I'm like, and I said, you know what, that attitude is the exact attitude that I fight every day. If some of us, God, there for the grace of God, not myself as yet, decide that having a whiskey gets me through the day, if I'm that desperate, wakes up and goes, oh, I think I'm going to be an alcoholic in a week.
Right.
You know, it's just, again, you've got to deal with it. I don't know where the man is. I'm assuming he's up in heaven with Joan Rivers causing chaos.
Oh, yeah.
And, you know, and that he's just thinking, maybe there's a slight regret, and he's like, come on, guys, why didn't someone maybe step in? And that's not the role of family. It's not the role of his children who got vilified because of what happened, or his wife and all of this. It's not looking to blame people. It's looking to ask, how did it get there? Why did this man and thousands of like him on a daily basis feel they have no option, that they can't reach out? And we as society have to sit back and go, we have created that paradigm.
Yeah, we have. Billy Myers, what's the one thing that you wish you had known that you didn't know at the time that really would have helped you?
I wish I'd known I was depressed.
Yeah.
I mean, it's so simple. I wish somebody had spotted things earlier, and that, you know, I wish that I had been on medicine during Kiss the Rain, and I actually would have enjoyed traveling the world and performing in front of, you know, 500,000 people in Venice, or the steps of the Vatican, or, you know, World Hunger Day and all these things. But I spent my entire time, to be honest, panicked.
Yeah.
I was what you would call a functioning depressed person. I could absolutely do the show. I could absolutely meet you and be hopefully charming. But inside, I was heavy and I was struggling, and I was going into my room most nights. And the only person who knew this was my road manager. And he would know that when I'd had enough, that it was time I had to get back into my hotel room and I had to curl up.
Yeah. What about your family? What was it like? Because there's so many great pieces out there just about, there's the coming out process of sexual orientation. Mm. There's also the coming out process to your family around mental illness and all the guilt and the shame and the embarrassment and all those triggers that happen. Talk to me about that coming out process.
Well, you know, I'm not particularly close to my family, so I never had to do the whole, I'm either, you know, bisexual or either, you know, or even talk about depression. I was incredibly lucky. I was surrounded by, you know, three friends in particular who just, it didn't matter what I did to push them away, they weren't going anywhere. And, You know, and I'm alive because of them. I'm alive because of my friend Hallie. I'm alive because of my friend Winston. And it's like they saved my life. And I'm still sometimes still an idiot and go through periods where I'm sort of like, you know, a little dissociative with you know, and I don't mean it, but it, you know, it can be difficult. I didn't have to. They decided for me.
Right.
And they made it easy. So I think on that respect, I go off easy. A lot of people do not get off so easy. You know, someone walks into work and goes, oh, the doctor gave me 2 weeks off because I suffered from depression today.
Right.
Just isn't what people want to go into work and say. They'd rather say, I had flu.
Right. You said this recently in a piece about Robin Williams. You said, quote, depression is such a terrible disease that is underrated on every level in terms of how devastating it truly is.
It is. It doesn't just potentially destroy an individual. It destroys a family. The impact when somebody has depression and you're living with that person with depression it's not an easy life for a wife or a child. It's not easy for the person, obviously, with depression. Then the impact of something drastically desperate happens, the impact of blame and guilt. There is nothing easy. Depression is dangerous because it's invisible and insidious. And that's what makes kids incredibly susceptible to it. And that's what makes it very dangerous.
Yeah. Yeah.
But the stigma that is attached to it is even more deadly.
Right.
And it's not the depression that kills most of the time. It's the stigma. It's the fear that you can't say because you will lose your job or people will think less of you. Or they will fire, you know, as I said, lose your job. Any number of things that people won't take you seriously. That if you just have a knip fit because someone did something wrong, that suddenly you're a psychopath. It is.
Yeah.
It's pervasive.
Unbelievable. Well, you have taken these emotions, you have taken your life and channeled them in such an incredible direction, and I think that's so important. It strikes me that for you, having an outlet is huge.
Yeah, music is an outlet. I mean, I get to be, as I say to my friends, I get to be completely self-indulgent, write what I'm thinking, and luckily, you know, a couple of people like it, so it's nice. I mean, getting to perform, and there's something very sick about it too. You know, you go on and you're hoping people are going to like you, which is probably not the best thing for somebody who fights depression to put themselves in that scenario, you know, on a regular basis. But I love it. I mean, you know, and then especially when someone comes up to you and they give you a lyric and it means the same thing to them, or even if it means something different to them, but they got it. For them, it meant something.
Yeah. Totally. I must ask, what are you working on these days?
Well, I'm doing what I think is, well, I'm still writing, but I'm thinking the next one's going to be all just simply acoustic, probably just me accompanied by an acoustic guitar. So it really lends to the melody and lyric. I love ambience, I love soundscapes. But I'm just thinking that instead of worrying about, oh, will a radio station play this, not to worry about that, but just to think, will the people who bought the last album love to buy this album because they love the songs? And the thing I get a lot of feedback on when I do live shows is that they just love that they work with an acoustic guitarist or a piano or a hoon player or whatever. And I'm like, and they say, I didn't know that about the lyric, or I thought Kiss the Rain was a happy song, you know, or whatever. And I'm like, they get a whole different perspective. There's an authenticity about being able to do that. And people actually get to hear what you're saying.
Yeah.
And kind of like acting. It's you're a little naked, but with that said, you know, it's not the end of the world. And at my age now, I have to be careful about going naked anywhere, but yeah.
So says the 29-year-old. Give me a break.
I was 29 way back in Kiss the Rain. So.
Well, let me tell you this. Let me just articulate for you. This is a little dicey, but this is my problem with you, singer-songwriter Billy Myers. My problem with you is that you will minimize everything I'm about to say about you, but I will still say it anyway, even though you're going to downplay it. You are one of those folks that, even after doing this show for as long as I've been doing it, It really and truly feels like an honor every time I speak to you because
oh my
you
God.
Are, no, no, don't start with me. You will let me do this. You really put yourself out there. Now, your music, as I said, your music is in regular rotation. I know all your ditties. I've stalked you for years and years. But you are so unbelievably forthright and accessible in a way that pulls back the curtain and certainly lets me access your music in a different way, but you also so palpably are making a difference. And my hope is that you know that because it really is happening each and every time you open your mouth.
Wow. Wow.
No, I mean, this is huge.
You make it very easy, so don't be silly. You know, you make it very easy.
Folks must stroll on over to – you can find Billie on Facebook. She's got the website. We'll link to that. I mean, you are just one of my favorite people out there for your bravery, for your accessibility. My hope is that you keep doing what you're doing, my friend.
Well, if it takes you 2 years to ask me to be back on your radio show, I won't be doing it with you. I can tell you that now.
I am so excited to speak to you in November of 2016. It's going to be – that's our year. That is going to be our year.
Listeners, you bear that in mind. If you haven't heard me on Ken's show in a year, you know that's it. You better start flooding him with phone calls because I'll be mighty pissed.
Can we do the next interview in Miami in person?
Oh, yes. Come on down.
I would love it. I would love it wherever. Or Cleveland, if you ever stroll through Cleveland.
I did a gig in Cleveland. That was a lot of fun.
See?
My memory serves me right. There was a club. Is there – I'm thinking there was a bridge. It was like there was an outdoor area to it. It's like a sports bar type of thing, I think.
Okay.
And a bridge very close. And I think water for some reason. I can't remember. But and I met a really good friend who came from Akron.
Yeah.
So there you go, you see.
I love that what probably actually happened is you were on some guy's balcony and the bathtub was nearby. But that's fine. You can be a sports bar. It's fine. Whatever. Everybody, stroll on over to Billie's website.
I was naked in the jacuzzi.
I wasn't going there. Billie Myers, you are musically and inspirationally a hero to me. Please keep doing what you're doing.
Thank you, my darling. And the same for you. 280 bloody shows.
It's
That's
crazy.
A lot, 7 years.
It's crazy. And yet we keep going.
I tell you what, you better have me on show 300. How's that? Even if it's just to throw you down and say, hi there, congratulations. Yo, baby.
That is a deal. You heard it here,
is
folks.
Is that a deal?
That's a deal.
So any listeners who are there, show 300. If you haven't called, don't listen to him for 301.
Remember that time that Billie Myers ruined my show? Yep, it just happened, folks. Singer-songwriter Billie Myers, what an absolute and always joy.
The pleasure is mine, darling. Always mine.
Well, I am flying solo for the rest of the show. Becca has a catering gig, or she's avoiding co-hosting for the third time. It's the curse. It's the This Show Is So Gay curse of the third time co-hosting, where many have fallen, but only a few have continued. Those few being Jody and the original Becca and Steve West. That's pretty much it. But Becca's going to be back because, you know, she lives here. And we got all this new equipment that we're installing in the attic. So the sound quality is going to improve dramatically, which is always a good thing. So look for more Becca and Ken talking about the news together next week. But for this week, you got just me. How amazing is singer-songwriter Billie Myers? I love her. Kiss the Rain I just played some of it. I could listen to that all day. There have been days that I've listened to that all day. Love it. And she's got so much to say, and the work that she's doing around mental health and using her voice to highlight those struggles is just huge. It is huge. So I do have some gay news for you. We, of course, must turn to marriage equality, because it wouldn't be a new update of the week without talking about marriage equality. The name of the game this week is Alaska, of all places. Alaska, not just for Sarah Palin. It's also a place where there's marriage equality. A federal judge last weekend struck down Alaska's ban on marriage equality, prompting state officials to announce their intent to appeal the ruling, because that's what they do. If we strike down a ban of marriage equality, then, of course, we must appeal it. Governor Sean Parnell, a Republican, said this, quote, although the district court today may have been bound by the recent Ninth Circuit panel opinion, the status of that opinion and the law in general in this area is in flux. I will defend our Constitution. By the way, I've looked at the Constitution and there are some equal rights clauses in there, so I'm not sure which parts of the Constitution he's looking at. I would suspect the only part he's looking at is the ban on marriage equality. So that's happening in Alaska, and then quite naturally we move from Alaska to Idaho, because who wouldn't want to do that? The Supreme Court last week lifted a stay of an appeals court ruling in favor of marriage equality in Idaho, which clears the way for same-sex couples to begin marrying in the state. Justice Anthony Kennedy had initially granted the stay at the request of Idaho Governor Butch Otter. This is just an opportunity, we talked about this last week, for me it's just an opportunity to remind you all that there is a governor, one of the 50 in this country, whose name is Butch Otter. Idaho Governor Butch Otter. And apparently he's not gay, and apparently it's not ironic. His name is Butch Otter. Can I just end the show on that? I can't, because we got a lot more time and a lot more news to cover. Some more effects of the Supreme Court's decision last week. And by the way, folks are not sure whether to call it a decision or a lack of a decision or an action, or a non-event. Either way, it has had some effects. We'll just say decision. The Supreme Court's decision last week not to hear a marriage case from Virginia, which is one of the states that they would not hear the case from, that now means that same-sex couples in the state can now adopt. Look at that. Virginia Governor Terry McAuliffe announced last week, quote, by formally recognizing that same-sex couples can now legally adopt, we are more fully complying with the ruling in this important case and sending the message once again that Virginia is open and welcoming to everyone. I don't understand the whole contrast in governors. I mean, I would think now, know that I have not been a governor. My highest elected office was select person there in Brattleboro, Vermont. I have not yet ascended to the governor. I'm not ruling it out. Haven't even run yet, so I don't even know if I would win. We'll see. But I would imagine, were I to be governor, that I would want to put out there that our state is open and welcoming to everyone. I would think even economically, that's a pretty darn good message. And that's what Virginia Governor Terry McAuliffe has said, as opposed to Idaho Governor Butch Otter, who does not want his state to be welcoming to everyone. As opposed to Governor Sean Parnell in Alaska, who says, quote, I will defend our Constitution. And what he is saying is that our Constitution is not open and welcoming to everyone. So kudos to Virginia Governor Terry McAuliffe, which, I don't know, I kind of have to imagine that that's the right way to go. That makes sense. So there's that. More. Let's go over to Kansas. The Kansas Supreme Court last Friday placed a temporary hold on the issuance of marriage licenses to same-sex couples in Johnson County. Kansas Attorney General Derek Schmidt had requested the stay. The Kansas Supreme Court will hear oral arguments on the issue on November 6th. So there's Kansas moving forward. Then we go to North Carolina. It just keeps going and going. Going and going. A federal judge last week affirmed that North Carolina's ban on same-sex marriage is unconstitutional. So there's North Carolina. Their ban is going to go away. This is Judge Max Cogburn. He wrote a 3-page decision. This is one of the best quotes from there. Quote, it is a legal issue, and it is clear as a matter of what is now settled law in the Fourth Circuit that North Carolina laws prohibiting same-sex marriage, refusing to recognize same-sex marriages originating elsewhere, and or threatening to penalize those who would solemnize such marriages are unconstitutional. There you go. That's in North Carolina. It's a lot of states. every week it's going to be a new update because it changes, it seems like, by the minute. So there's that. Now, here's what kind of bugs me. So all of that news, I should say, we're trying to credit our sources. It's kind of important because people are working to put this information together. This is all this week from the Gay Politics Report, everything I've reported thus far. Again, that's sponsored by the Victory Fund. It's a free twice-weekly news summary for the LGBT community. If you just go to smartbrief.com, you can subscribe to the Gay Politics Report. Now, often there on the Gay Politics Report, they have a poll. And it's fun doing a poll with a co-host. There is no co-host this week, so I'm just going to rail against the poll. The poll this week asks, if full marriage equality is achieved, where do you think LGBT activists should focus their attention next? And your four options are workplace discrimination protections, adoption rights, anti-bullying in schools, or none of these. So I will just tell you what people have said thus far, and then I'm going to rail against the question for a second. So thus far in the poll, 71% have answered workplace discrimination protection, so overwhelming, overwhelming majority. 17.2% have said anti-bullying in schools. 8.91% have said adoption rights, and 2.85% said none of these. Here's the problem. Let me repeat the question again. If full marriage equality is achieved, where do you think LGBT activists should focus their attention next? Well, that kind of presupposes that we are one-trick ponies. And we're not one-trick ponies. And this is what I've been railing against. This is what bugs me so, so much about both the way that we cover news and in some ways, you know, how we approach LGBT activism. We're not one-trick ponies. In fact, we shouldn't be focused on one issue because they're all connected. And so, yeah, blood drives aren't on there. I would have answered, you know, in that small percentage that said another issue. But I don't like the idea that we can only focus on one thing. And it also implies that the most important thing to focus on right now is marriage equality. Marriage equality is extraordinarily important. I'm not putting out there that it's not. But it is not the most important issue. None are the most important issues. They're all connected. And so we have to work on it on a number of fronts. And I worry about complacency. I worry about once marriage equality is achieved, and we've had all these amazing nonprofit folks and executive directors on the show who work in states where there is marriage equality, and most of them have said all of the same thing, that when you achieve marriage equality, it then becomes difficult to get people involved in other issues. I worry about LGBT activists just dropping off and saying, well, we can get married now. That was the most important thing. I worry about presenting to the American public at large, hey, marriage equality is the most important thing. And then once we achieve that, trying to convince them, oh, wait, by the way, these things are really important too. By the way, we want gay men to be able to give blood and save more lives. By the way, it would be great if here in Ohio we would achieve marriage equality, but you could still be fired for being gay. And I worry about our ability to convince everyone when we're hanging our hat on marriage equality. I worry about our ability to convince other people, hey, these things are important too. Because I think folks are going to get weary. Well, wait a second, gays. We just gave you marriage equality. Or you fought for it and won, however you want to phrase that one. You have marriage equality. What now? That's why it's so important that we be putting out there, look, there's so many things. Can you imagine? You're in Ohio with me. Come visit Cleveland. And you get marriage equality. You can now marry your partner, should you have a partner. And you put a picture of them up on your desk. You can still be fired for that. You have now gotten married. You have also lost your job. And so if we attack these things one by one and not show how they're all interconnected, not show that everything is one big system with bells and pulleys and levers and whatnot, where you pull on one thing and it affects the other thing, if we present something that's so short-sighted as a one-issue, one-trick pony, it doesn't work. And so important that we present other things because there are other issues out there. I know I'm obsessed with the blood donation thing, and we're going to be talking about that next week, but I do want to put out there that a young gay rights activist has filed what is believed to be the first federal lawsuit challenging the U.S. Food and Drug Administration's ban on gay and bisexual men from donating blood. Virginia resident Caleb Lysecki, who is 19, filed his lawsuit last Thursday in U.S. District Court and alleges that the FDA ban is discriminatory and unconstitutional as it unfairly singles out gay men, that it's based on outdated science and detection methods, and perpetuates the stereotype that HIV is a gay disease by implying that all gay men are sick. This is Virginia resident Caleb Lysecki. Does that name sound familiar to you? It should. Or maybe it doesn't, because it was so long ago. Caleb Lysecki was on our show when he was 15 and a half years old. Years ago, 3.5 years ago, he was on our show because he was doing amazing work in Arizona. And he was working on providing an LGBT homeless shelter for youth. Amazing. And now he's living in Virginia, and he's filed a lawsuit. Incredible. The suit notes that since the beginning of the HIV and AIDS epidemic more than 30 years ago, the scientific community's understanding of the virus has changed dramatically, including advances in blood screening technology, and opposition from the nation's blood banks and medical community have called the current ban, quote, medically and scientifically unwarranted. The American Medical Association, the largest association of physicians in the United States, they voted last year to oppose the decades-long ban, noting that HIV and AIDS testing has become standard practice in blood donations to minimize risk to recipients. This is from AMA board member Dr. William Kobler. He said in a statement last year, quote, the lifetime ban, this is a board member for the American Medical Association. He said this, quote, the lifetime ban on blood donation for men who have sex with men is discriminatory and not based on sound science. It's right there. Our buddy Caleb, who hopefully, we think he's going to be on the show next week. We're working on it. He said yes. We thought it was going to be this week, but we're going to push it to next week. Caleb will be back on the show after 3.5 years. He has said that the ban violates his constitutional rights and the rights of others by preventing him from participating in the life-saving act of donating blood because of his sexual orientation. Just to remind you all, because it's important to have that international perspective, similar bans have been lifted or modified in Canada, the United Kingdom, Australia, Japan, South Africa, Sweden, and New Zealand. All of them allow gay and bisexual men to donate blood under less stringent restrictions. Amazing. Amazing. So Caleb Lysecki, he was 15 and a half when he was on our show, and then he went on to file this first ever lawsuit. I love it. I love it. It's like we're tracking him. It's amazing. So there's that story. What else is going on? In Houston, Texas, one of the only places in the country with a gay mayor, one of the most prominent gay mayors in the country. I think it's the gay mayor with the most number of residents. A same-sex couple claims they were kicked out of a cab for kissing. Travis Player and his partner Andres Orozco were dropped off several blocks from their home in the Museum District. Player said, quote, we thought he was joking until he actually pulled over. We gave each other a kiss, and he told us to get out of the car. So you got cabs in Houston. There's that going on. There's more. So I kind of railed against this. On the cover of Out magazine is Benedict Cumberbatch, you know, Sherlock Holmes, who's very pretty. I enjoy Benedict. Very, very pretty. Totally my style. If he were to be gay, I would make a play for him. And, you know, he was in my vicinity, and I was the only other person around. So all of those things. But he's not gay. And yet he's on the cover of Out magazine. Now, I am all for allies. Many of you listening are allies. The gay community needs allies. I don't know that they need to be on the cover of Out magazine because it's called Out magazine. Now, if it was a weekly magazine and we're talking about 52 covers a year, sure. But Out magazine is a monthly. There are 12 covers a year. See how I just did that? Quick math. I did quick math there. 12 months, 12 covers. Why not have 12 gay people there on the cover of, I'm not sure if I mentioned, Out magazine? Love that Sherlock Holmes. Love him. But not gay. Let's put a gay person on the cover of Out magazine. Now, we will put out there that Benedict had some amazing quotes. Amazing quotes. And he has said he lamented the horrors faced by gay people in many countries, and he has fiercely declared his determination to stand with them. This is what he said in this interview with Out magazine. He said, quote, people are being beheaded in countries right now because of their beliefs or sexual orientations. It's terrifying. It's medieval. a beheading. I take up arms. This is what he's saying. It's amazing. I take up arms against someone who was telling me I had to believe in what they believed or they would kill me. I would fight them. I would fight them to the death. And I believe the older you get, you have to have an idea of what's right and wrong. You can't have unilateral tolerance. You have to have a point where you go, well, religious fundamentalism is wrong. Amazing quote. Amazing ally. Also, not gay, and maybe not on the cover of Out Magazine. Put it in one of the little bylines or the headlines there on the cover to tease people, more people to buy it, right? Because we're putting him on the cover because he's a well-known person, and that would increase the sales of Out Magazine. That's what they do there at Out. It's not a nonprofit, so they want to increase sales. So put this famous guy on the cover. I get that. But he's not gay. I know. I'm beating a dead horse on this one. But they're on the cover. Hey, inside, Sherlock Holmes has these great quotes. But put gay people on the cover of Out Magazine. I'm done. A lot of talk this week about the Vatican. So what had happened was it started out Hungarian Cardinal Peter Erdo read out an interim report at the General Congregation this week at the Vatican. The report declared that homosexuals, which there's that religious word, but we'll just move past it. Homosexuals had, quote, gifts and qualities to offer, and even raised the prospect of the Catholic Church recognizing the positive aspects of same-sex relationships. There you go. It went on to say the church must welcome divorced people and recognize the positive aspects of civil marriages and even Catholics who live together without being married. The document was described as an earthquake in the church's attitude toward gays and heralded as a turning point in policy by Vatican experts. But then they backtracked a little. Facebook was afire. Hey, yay for the Pope. Look at this Pope. Yay, Pope. That's my cheer. That was my gay Jewish cheer for the Pope. That's about as good as I can do. That was as close to Latin as I'll get as well. There was no Latin in there. The day after, on Tuesday, conservative bishops distanced themselves from the document's remarkable opening towards gays and divorced Catholics, calling it, quote, unacceptable. They said it was an unacceptable deviation from church teaching that does not reflect their views. The leaders of the bishops' meeting that produced it have now said it was simply a, quote, working document. And, my friends, was not intended to be an official statement of church teaching on family life. Instead, they said it was a reflection of bishops' view that will be debated and amended before a final version is released on Saturday. The Holy See Press Office and bishops had, quote, appreciated the document, but offered additional reflections to bring together various points of view. Not so much, folks. It was a great day on Monday when my brother and sister Catholics were very excited because they thought, and everybody else, everybody following, you know, following religion and following faith and following the way things work in the world, when we thought that, wow, this is evolving. That's really exciting. But then it wasn't even 24 hours later. By the way, shout out to Andy Hum. Andy Hum is one of the co-hosts. He's been on the show before of Gay USA, and he had some great posts out there on the Facebook just saying to people, I would cool your jets for a second. This is what he was writing on Monday, and I'm totally paraphrasing. I don't know that he uses the phrase cool your jets. I don't know that anyone does other than me and my mom, probably my dad. But he said, can we hold on a second before we start praising the Pope? Because there's some problematic stuff going on. And then Andy Hum, totally right, the next day, the church backpedaled on that a little bit. Last story of the week in Charlotte, North Carolina. While the recent decision to allow same-sex marriage in North Carolina has been a relief to many, for some it's been a disappointment. For conservative leaders around the state, they say that disappointment is with judges not respecting the people's original decision. So this is from Franklin Graham, who's one of the conservative leaders there in the state of North Carolina. He said, quote, it's sad when a judge is able to overrule the will of the people. This is a democracy, and the people spoke, and we're seeing that activist judges across the country are overturning the will of the people. We saw that in California. We're seeing it now in North Carolina. I don't know what will take place. I love that last sentence. I don't know what will take place, because it's like this dramatic foreshadowing of, hey, what's going to happen now? So let's go back over it. We are fine with activist judges, the conservatives. I'm just putting myself with them. We are fine with activist judges when they decide in our favor, But then when they give people rights that we don't want them to have rights, then they're activist judges. So I love that word because it only comes up in certain contexts. And then, yes, a judge is able to overrule the will of the people, folks. That would be the country that we live in. That's our judicial system. That's why we have those crazy things called checks and balances, because the judicial system can swoop in and they can say, hey, there's a constitution. We're sworn to protect that constitution. And even if the will of the people is to go against that constitution, we here, the judges, can swoop in and say, no, no, there's a constitution. So Franklin Graham, and he is the president, I should say, of Samaritan's Purse, which is a big organization there in the North Carolina. Okay. He's also taking care of Billy Graham. He's working with Billy Graham. I don't know what he's doing with Billy Graham. I didn't mean to suggest anything untoward. But it's not sad when a judge is able to overrule the will of the people. It's funny that his next words are, this is democracy. Yes, that's how this works. The judicial system is part of the democracy. It's not just about people voting. So I understand you said this is a democracy and the people spoke. Uh-huh. And then part of our democracy is to have a judicial system where judges can swoop in and say, oh no, will of the people. And by the way, side note, why are we having a majority population vote on minority rights? That doesn't work. We say that over and over again. It's not sad when a judge is able to do it. That's kind of one of the bedrocks of how we work here in the United States. This concludes the civic lesson as offered by Dr. Ken Schneck, who is in no way qualified to be teaching a civics lesson. And by the way, that also concludes our gay news for the week. You guys, as always, love hearing from you. Send me an email, ken@thisshowisogay.com. I love getting your guest ideas. I love when you send me, well, get Rachel Maddow. I would love to get Rachel Maddow. I have no in with Rachel Maddow. None. So if you have an in with Rachel Maddow, I love if you send me, here's a guest idea and here's how you get in touch with them. We'll always try. We're not always successful because some of these folks are hard to get in touch with. You should get Neil Patrick Harris. I would love to get Neil Patrick Harris. I would love to get Senator Tammy Baldwin. I just don't have the in. So if you also have an in with folks, send me the idea with the in, and then we'll go that route. Or if you just have ideas, we'll take them as well. And again, if you know of people in your community that are doing great things to raise up the voices of LGBT and ally, men and women, children, grandparents, brothers and sisters, everybody out there, send us those names as well. What happened was 3.5 years ago, someone said, you should talk to this Caleb Lysecki. He's 15 and a half. Then look what happened. A few years later, he just filed the first federal lawsuit against the Food and Drug Administration. These things happen. It's amazing. I love it. I love it. Our thanks, of course, to the wonderful, the incomparable Billie Myers. I just adore her. We will play another one of her songs right this very second. So you guys, you know what to do. I don't have to tell you, but I'll tell you every single week because that's what I do. Get out there. Go do whatever it is that you do to use your voice to make a difference for your LGBT and ally brothers and sisters. And while you are out there using your voice, while you're out there making a difference in whatever way that you do it, please remember, why be gay when you can be so gay?
Could do much better, better than what, hey, I should go, let's go, bruh.